This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody, it's Jessica, and this is the first episode that we are doing after the election, after election 2024. What do we know? We know that President Trump will once again be the occupant of the Oval Office. We know that Republicans will control the Senate. As I record this episode on November 12th, we do not know who will control the House of Representatives, but we expect that will likely be Republicans, allowing Republicans to achieve the quote-unquote trifecta of controlling the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. So I want to talk briefly about some legal issues that we should be looking at. And the caveat here, of course, is that it depends. It depends on what President Trump decides to do, how he decides to do it, and how different people, groups, and even states decide to try and challenge those actions. So I want to start with the question that I've gotten most often over the last week, which is, what happens to the legal cases pending against former President Trump? Then I want to move into some big legal questions that we should be looking at over the next, frankly, 4+ years. So first, the legal questions, the legal cases, the criminal cases that are pending against the former president. So there are two federal cases. One is the DC election interference case, and the other is the case out of Mar-a-Lago dealing with the alleged unlawful retention of documents. Let's take the DC election interference case first. Now, where is that case right now? Well, it was back before the trial court judge, Judge Chutkan, because she was applying the new Supreme Court standard for when presidents and former presidents enjoy immunity from criminal prosecution. On July 1st of this year, the Supreme Court came out with a big new decision about the scope of immunity for presidents and former presidents facing criminal cases. And really briefly, what the court said is when it comes to those acts that only a president can do, things like appointing an ambassador or a cabinet member or pardoning somebody for federal crimes, that there is absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. When it comes to other official acts, things that, for instance, a member of Congress or a senator could also engage in these type of acts, then there is a presumption of immunity. And for private conduct, there is no immunity. And where the DC election interference case was, I said it was back before Judge Chutkan, and she was sorting out the amended complaint from the prosecutor in that case, Special Counsel Jack Smith, and trying to figure out which of the allegations fell within which categories, meaning which of the allegations in the complaint involved core presidential functions, official acts, or private conduct. And it seems at this point certain that that case will go away. Why? Because we know that the president can fire Special Counsel Jack Smith the moment that he does assume office. We also know that President Trump has said that he would appoint an attorney general who would walk into federal court and say, we want to dismiss this case. And frankly, both federal cases pending against him. So it is very likely that that case will stall out and or evaporate. I don't think anything will happen with respect to that case other than a dismissal. Now, let's move to the other federal case. Again, this is the case out of Mar-a-Lago dealing with the alleged unlawful retention of sensitive government documents. That case actually has already been dismissed. It was dismissed by trial court judge Eileen Cannon, and that case is currently up on appeal before the 11th Circuit, where Special Counsel Jack Smith is appealing Judge Chutkan's decision. She had dismissed the case saying that Special Counsel Jack Smith was not properly appointed. So it wasn't about the underlying facts of the case. It was about Jack Smith's appointment. I expect that that case will also evaporate because, again, President Trump will fire Jack Smith. He will appoint an attorney general who says, let's drop the appeal, And again, that case essentially goes away. So those are the two federal cases. Now let's move on to the state cases. So first, there's the Georgia election interference case. And as we know, that case has largely been bogged down because of accusations of conflicts of interest involving the district attorney, Fani Willis, and she had appointed her boyfriend to be part of that case. And there were a lot of accusations surrounding that appointment. That case stalled out for a number of reasons. But what's going to happen with that case? Because that's a state case. And the president of the United States does not have the power to fire or hire a district attorney. I expect that that case will also evaporate. And here's why. I think the legal challenge from the Trump administration would be that a state court doesn't have the power to move forward with a criminal case against the sitting president of the United States. That basically the state could not continue that case because it would interfere with the president's duties and obligations to faithfully take care to execute the laws. And I think that that would be a successful argument. So whether or not that case entirely evaporates or if it's put on pause, nothing is going to happen with that case, at least for President Trump's term. One other case, and this is the New York hush money case, another state case. And this case has already in some ways come to completion in the sense that there's been a verdict. As I said, I'm recording this episode on November 12th, and the judge in that case, Judge Mershon, was actually supposed to give a ruling today based on the question of that Supreme Court case and immunity and whether any of the allegations that form the basis of the complaint, again, a complaint that was successfully brought by the prosecution, they did get a conviction on 34 felony counts, whether or not there was any portion of that complaint that relied on official acts by the president, because as we know, there's absolute immunity based on official acts. Right now, what we know is that Judge Mershon, the trial court judge in that case, has said that he's going to pause proceedings. This was a request by both the prosecution and the defense. He said we're in unprecedented times. And what I expect, although again, this is unprecedented, is that likely what will happen is that Judge Mershon will say that the basis of this case does involve private conduct, but that he will not sentence President Trump to any jail time, because I think we can all think through all the questions surrounding a judge saying to a sitting president, you must spend time in a state prison. Again, even if Judge Mershon was to give a sentence on November 26, which is the date that is currently set for sentencing, although that will likely be postponed, that sentence would be appealed. There's no world in which the sentence could actually go into effect until, I believe, the former president becomes the current president, and you're just not going to have a current president be sent to state prison. I just don't envision that happening. So that is a roundup of where the legal cases are. And frankly, as I think you all understand by now, the punchline here is that the legal cases are going to either go away forever or at least for the entire presidential term. Now, I want to talk about, now moving on to kind of the second big part of this episode, I want to talk about some legal issues that I think we should all be on the lookout for. And number one is questions about federal power and the separation of powers. And because it looks like Republicans will control the Senate and potentially control the House, what I think we're going to see is a lot more legislation than executive orders. Because when a president does not have the legislative branch behind him, obviously, it's harder to achieve more policy goals through legislation, and he tends to issue more executive orders. In this case, I think, again, because it looks like Republicans control both political branches, the question really becomes whether or not legislation is constitutional, how much the judiciary is potentially comfortable pushing back against popularly enacted legislation, and how much states are going to push back against legislation as well. Now, let's talk about some more substantive areas. So, immigration. Obviously, this has been a huge part of President Trump's campaign. Already, we see with certain appointments that he's going to make for cabinet level positions and staff that it looks like this is an enormous priority for him. We need to look at both executive orders and new legislation and really keep an eye on how existing laws and regulations are enforced. Specific areas, obviously, to look at are deporting undocumented people, tightening asylum laws, restricting visa programs. And a big question that I think we need to tackle in a separate episode is, will he use the Alien Enemies Act to deport people? So that's a quick primer on some immigration issues. Next, the Department of Justice. And here I think we're going to be focusing on the difference between rules and norms. And as we see, much of the government actually functions based on a gentle person's agreement. And so what we're, I think, going to see with the next Trump administration is not much adherence to many norms when it comes to things involving the Department of Justice. That's just a prediction. But that is different from the requirement of adhering to rules. And one thing related to that that we need to look at is, will Trump follow through on his promise to order his attorney general to go after political opponents like Senator-elect Adam Schiff, like the Bidens? How will he use the Department of Justice? Historically, the Department of Justice has been an independent agency and not used, for instance, to go after a president's political rivals and opponents. Also related to the Department of Justice, will Trump tell the Department of Justice to prioritize enforcing immigration laws and drug laws? I think the answer is probably yes. And again, we already know that the federal criminal cases against Trump, as we talked about a few minutes ago, are winding down, and the Department of Justice is obviously involved in that. Next big area, federal judicial appointments. I think what we need to look at here is the difference between appointments that look like the type of appointments that any Republican president would make, the more typical conservative jurists, and the difference between that and whether or not President Trump is appointing people who don't have the typical judicial experience, or a situation where his priority is not conservative legal thought, but loyalty. So again, I know that we tend to paint with a broad brush, but what I would say is that not all liberal judges are the same. Not all conservative judges are the same. And we really need to keep our eyes on the specifics of each individual appointment, I think, before we draw any conclusions about those appointments. Next big area, and I've written a piece on this, civil service protection. I know this might not sound super sexy, but this is actually a huge deal. And Trump could continue what he attempted to start at the end of his first term, which is reducing job protection for career government employees. Currently, there are about 2.2 million people who work for the federal government who have something called civil service protection. And the idea behind that is that as a government worker, you should be hired based on merit, not based on favoritism, for instance, and you should be promoted based, again, on merit, and you should be fired if you're not doing your job as opposed to if you're not loyal to the president. Now, Trump could do away with much of this via executive order and legislation and make it much easier for him to hire, promote, and fire government employees. This would have huge repercussions throughout the federal government and specifically agencies like the Department of Justice, the Food and Drug Administration, and the EPA. A few more topics here. Next, abortion. I get this question a lot. I've tackled this question a lot over the last week. Will Trump support a federal ban on abortion, and or will he support federal laws that do things short of that, like enforce a very old federal law called the Comstock Act? Without devoting the entire episode to this question, I would say, again, the first hurdle here is a political one, not a legal one, in the sense of we just need to look to see what the priorities will be for President Trump and the Senate and potentially the House. And then we need to look at the legal issues. Next, voting rights and election laws. So will President Trump pursue new, stricter election laws dealing with things like voter ID requirements, limiting vote by mail, limiting early voting, trying to accomplish some things that occur through the state via the federal government? Another topic, anti-discrimination laws. How much does President Trump want to enter the so-called culture wars and try and implement a federal law concerning issues like the rights of minors who identify as transgender? Is that something where President Trump and Republicans want to try and push for federal legislation? And again, if they do, then the question becomes whether or not that legislation is in fact constitutional. Next, antitrust laws. This is an area where President Biden has been pretty aggressive. And I think what we can expect is the Trump administration is likely to be far less aggressive in enforcing federal antitrust laws. And this could change the course in some big pending litigation, for instance, involving Google. And finally, the environment. I think what we can already expect based on statements that President Trump has made and, again, appointments that he's making is that he will make it a priority to loosen environmental controls. And we need to take a look at how he does that. Is it via legislation? Is it through rulemaking? Is it through the power of appointing people, for instance, the EPA, who will have a different set of priorities? And what I want to offer to you is that we might want to put the big legal issues of the next administration into a couple of categories. And I'm just going to list five here. There's certainly a lot of different ways that we could organize our thoughts here. But number one, where is Trump most likely to bring challenges to existing laws? Two, where is he most likely to push for new laws or regulations? Three, where is he most likely to issue executive orders? Four, what types of judges, again, is he likely to appoint? And then five, a kind of grab bag of places where we need to look at how and whether the Trump administration tries to expand executive power, which is something that presidents have tried to do for decades now, and how that pushes against the separation of powers and federalism, meaning the power of states. So I hope that helps us to all organize our thinking in terms of what could come next over the last 4 years. Again, lots of things are hypothetical right now, but we will certainly keep an eye on it. There will be a lot to discuss. Please, as always, rate, review, and subscribe, and have a good day.